Dr. Jeffrey Halstead has been Canandaigua's hometown dentist for more than 35 years, offering routine dental care as well as cosmetic dentistry, implants, and dentures by their highly trained and experienced staff. Visit them online at canandaiguadentistry.com or find them on Facebook and Instagram. Today we are sitting down with the man who has served as Auburn's superintendent of schools since 2015. Earlier this month, Jeff Pirozzolo announced that he would be retiring next January. And just like that, he's with us here in studio. Jeff, thanks for coming down today.
Hey, thank you for having me, Josh. I appreciate it.
So let's start with the easy question, I suppose. Why now?
Because I qualify, right? I'm in my 31st year. Soon to be starting up my 32nd year in education, and things have changed since I've started. And in the education world, in society, I love what I do. I love Auburn. I love the kids. I love our staff, the whole community. But you know, everyone needs a change, and somebody coming in with new ideas, new strategies. That can always be good for a school district as well. So, you know what, I'm with the dinosaurs, and I know my place. I know when the time is up, and it's time to start doing some new and fun things. Plus, I'm going to be a grandfather in June, so I'll be able to spend more time with the family and with my new grandchild coming soon, so very excited about that.
Big congratulations. Thank on you. That's a real life mark there. When you look back at the last few years, what were some of the things that you were seeing that brought you to this point where you were thinking to yourself, perhaps new leadership, new ideas, time to see some change for Auburn?
Well, you know, one thing that I'm really excited about is I started the work back in 2015. I'm meeting with a lot of legislators, a lot of leaders. I spoke with the Commissioner of Education, was starting up pathways for students and, sort of thinking out of the box because, public education, back then, there was just a Regents diploma. And it was, one box for everybody. And we know it doesn't work that way. One thing I'm really excited about is with the Blue Ribbon Commission is the coming out of these new pathways. So there's going to be different ways for students to have success in school districts because, again, the world is changing. The world is becoming technology. And a lot of times in education, we've been doing the same thing for the last 100 years. And if society's changing around us, we have to change what we're doing in schools as well. And I'm glad that somebody's finally listening. This has been going on for a long time. You know, the pushback I remember 20 years ago was every kid has to go to college. Well, every kid doesn't have to go to college. We've got trades out there. We've got manufacturing. We have so many opportunities where we have no employees, no staff. Kids need to find their niche early, and exposure to those different career paths I think are going to be huge, and hopefully these pathways that the state is creating is going to allow for that to happen, because we need electricians, we need plumbers, we need all the trades.
And I think there's consensus now, right, that this needs to exist from K all the way through 12, and it needs to be a more individualized plan for every student. When you think about how significant that can be, this type of change can be over the next 5 to 10 years in terms of actual outcomes for students, how much faith do you have, or how much excitement do you have about the prospect of this really being much better for students?
Oh, I think it's going to make a huge difference. You know, when we talk about, you use the term individual plan, individual education plan, we really focus on special education, right? Because they have IEPs. Every student in school should have their own individual plan, career plan, education plan, whatever you want to use the terminology. And it does start from kindergarten on. We focus so much at the secondary level, but building those building blocks at the elementary level is such an important piece of this. I'm on many, many committees in Cayuga County with upcoming Micron, and we're really excited to develop and be introduced to some of the curriculum that Micron has developed in other places, so we can start giving our kids in Cayuga County an advantage, so that when Micron opens up, that they're going to be ready and have many different opportunities. And it's not just Micron. We have a lot of manufacturing in Cayuga County that really doesn't have a huge baseline for employment, because they just can't get people there. We want to make sure that we're taking care of our local needs as well as looking in the future, such as a Micron.
And when you think about, you know, it's no secret, population decline, enrollment decline in a lot of school districts across the region. When you think about programming like that and the ability to potentially capture some of those students and keep them Cayuga County residents, keep them in Auburn instead of going elsewhere, how important is that because of the things that the region is just having to deal with?
And that's huge. And, you know, we talk a lot about grow your own. I have those conversations with my Board of Education all the time. We want our students that graduate from Auburn to come back and teach in Auburn. We want them to always be part of our community. And we do hire a lot of Auburn that used to be Auburn students are now Auburn teachers. And I think that's a huge, huge part. It's that family and community, right?
Yeah.
And what I'm really looking forward to is if the numbers are projected the correct way, with Micron coming to Central New York, they're saying a boom from anywhere 250,000 people to over 500,000 people. That would increase our enrollment in our schools in Central New York, and that is needed. That really is needed. That's exciting. There are some real exciting times coming within the next 10 years. I look forward to reading about it, and you know, hearing the conversation. And again, I'm going to continue to be active on all the boards I am on in Cayuga County and Auburn. I'm going to continue that work. I just was named as a board of trustee for Cayuga Community College, so I'm looking forward to keeping that connection, because that will still connect me back to Auburn School District as well. So, you know, those things I don't plan on stopping anytime soon. So I will keep busy with that.
You mentioned in brief there alternatives to just going to college. And of course, when I was in high school 15, 20 years ago, it was go to college or bust and nothing in between. When you think about your career overall and that shift, especially in recent years, how it's accelerated away from the traditional four-year undergrad path, how significant is that? Because I think for a lot of folks on the outside, they hear some numbers and they might think, well, maybe, you know, a couple more kids every year are choosing to not go to college. But it's really quite a bit more dramatic than that. What have you seen in terms of that shift over those last, you know, 6, 7, 8, 10 years?
I think one great piece is BOCES. Our kids getting credentials, whether it's as an electrician, again, auto, nursing. A lot of those programs have further education. But, you know, we talk to our kids a lot about manufacturing. You know, you get a job in manufacturing, those companies will pay for your further education. You know, take advantage with the cost of what college is right now, providing the opportunities for kids to get micro-credentialed through BOCES or through the school district so that they're employable when they graduate. It provides many, many more alternatives. And I think a lot of the kids are realizing that, because instead of coming out of a college with a four-year degree and being in the hole $100,000 versus you're already starting to make $50,000 when you walk out with your diploma, it just provides a lot more opportunity and flexibility. Again, I encourage those kids that do want to go to college, that have those goals of being a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, absolutely, we stand behind them 100% as well. But we need to balance out. Not everybody can have a college degree, but there are still so many great jobs out there where you don't need them.
Yeah. COVID-19 pandemic. Have schools, in your estimation, have schools recovered? Have school districts recovered from the pandemic?
Not even close. Our achievement gaps are still huge. I think you're going to see that for probably the next 10 years. I don't think that's going to really change much. As far as the mental health crisis that's out there, I can tell you that before COVID hit, our chronic absenteeism in 2019 was just a little bit under 20%. Now it's around 35%. So we've had ramifications from COVID that, and again, when I talk about chronic absenteeism, like put a number on that, right?
Yeah.
It's 10%. So the kids go to school for around 180 days. So 18 absences or more is considered chronic absenteeism. So we have around 35% of our student population that we have that are chronically absent. And again, I get that. If kids had COVID, they might have been out for 10 days right. with COVID. So there were sicknesses. But we're talking about kids with more than 50 days out. We've seen a huge rise. Our enrollment before COVID, we had a conversation about this a few years ago. We were stagnant. We were right around 4,200 kids for like 11 years. You know, it was we weren't seeing an increase. It was a plus or minus of 5 to 15 kids every year. After COVID hit, we currently have a little bit over 3,800 students right now. So we've seen a decline since COVID. So even our enrollment has gone down. But it's every facet of education. But the mental health crisis, you know, since COVID, we have social workers and school counselors in all of our buildings now. The supports that the county and the city of Auburn brings mental health counselors into our buildings. So we've seen a huge, huge impact from COVID in our school district.
You mentioned achievement gaps, and that's actually was my next question. I think when people hear that, they kind of get confused about what that means, or can you put that in kind of like in context of where a student is versus where they in theory should be at that point? Are we talking like grade level behind? Are we talking like half a year behind? Is it somewhere in between, or does it vary by the student?
It does vary, but we want kids to be at grade level.
Yeah.
But when we were out of school for about a year and a half, because again, COVID hit in March, and then the following year, we ran a hybrid schedule. So kids were only in school every other day because yeah. of our numbers. So that whole school year, they didn't receive everyday education. So those kids that were in kindergarten, first, second, third, fourth grade, that's a lot of reading to miss, right? So when we look at our kids at grade level, yeah, it varies. Some kids are one grade level behind. Some are multiple grade levels behind. And trying to catch them up is very difficult because not only are you trying to catch them up, but you also have to teach at grade level.
I was going to say, how it seems like an absolutely impossible, without holding the student back,
correct?
Right? Like it seems like an absolutely impossible concept to be able to pack an entire year plus half a year, maybe another whole year worth of learning in one academic calendar. It seems impossible.
It is. It really is. And, you know, there's not enough hours in the day. There's not enough specialized teachers. If it's reading, you know, we only have a certain amount of reading teachers in the district. And our classroom teachers are fantastic, and they all teach reading. But when you're going down to the deficiencies yeah. and really using those strategies, you know, when you got a class of 22 kids in front of you, it's hard to sit down. when you have, you know, seven kids that are behind, how do you differentiate all of those different strategies? So that's what makes it more difficult. So it's going to be a process. And, you know, our kids that are have been coming into kindergarten the last couple of years, they're more on a grade level basis. But even some of them missed preschool.
Yeah.
You know, so that's why I'm saying you're going to see those ramifications for the next 10 years all the way through.
How does, a lot of people are going to be curious, how would a teacher handle those situations? Like, how do you handle a situation with students that are, say, a year and a half behind? Is it, you know, individual kind of like help during class time? And what kind of challenges does that pose to teachers? And then, you know, or is it some other work in the classroom or outside the classroom to try and get these students going in the right direction?
Yeah, so again, what we try to do is we try to block off the day. So we may use an hour and a half of our day for ELA. And within those times, we break them up in groups so we can bring extra supports in to classrooms. So even though you have a third grade teacher, all of our third grade in that building may break up into different groups. So we can still do a lot of excelling with the students that are at grade level or above, because we do have a lot of students that are above grade level as well. Thank goodness, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're challenging them more. Mm-hmm. You don't need as many resources with the kids that are at grade level and above grade level, but we need more teacher support with the kids that are below grade level. So really breaking them up into multiple groups really helps to get that work done versus teaching a whole lesson to kids that are from 3 years below grade level to grade levels above. So that's really what that is those small group interventions really, really help us the most in that case.
And I want to get into the staffing side of running a school district here in a couple minutes too. But one of the things on student outcomes that we hear a lot about, or a lot of criticism of even, standardized testing. Does it seem like from your perspective that the state is at least willing to look at turning the corner on some of the expectations that have been set in the past around standardized testing and how central they've always been to the K through 12 experience, and maybe giving you guys some hope that there are going to be alternatives, or perhaps they won't be as heavily considered in the future?
Yeah, I think that's going to be huge, because again, think about even when we went to school, right? You had to pass those Regents exams to graduate. You've got kids that work so hard that may just fall short on a couple Regents exams. You know, I know there's been some latitude since COVID hit, but before then there was nothing, right? You got a 65 or higher or you did not pass. I think that latitude that they're going to provide, so it may not be a Regents exam pathway. You might be able to do more work experience or a project. I think that provides many different ways for kids to be successful. At the younger grade levels, when we talk about standardized testing, you know, you remember the movement where everybody opted out, right? You know, I remember my son saying, "Hey, Dad, do I have to go take that?" I said, "Absolutely, you're taking the test," right?
Get in.
and one of the good pieces of that, that's to find where kids' gaps are, right? So we can take that information. If we're building individual plans for kids, you can look at those standardized tests, say, okay, where are the kids' gaps? Where are their strengths? And then you can build around. Those are what they should be for. It's not to put a label on a kid. It's to find where their strengths and their weaknesses lie and try to build their program around that. So I think you can use testing scores for, you know, a good purpose, but also we have to have the results in a timely manner.
Yeah.
So sometimes we get the results and we're already halfway through another school year, right?
Right.
So, you know, things have to be figured out. We have to be smarter at what we do.
Yeah.
and more relevant of what we do. So I think there are some students that would say, I'm not doing any other pathway but the Regents exam. I know how to study for those exams. So again, keep that option available for some kids that really excel in those things. But you know, the majority of kids, with the pressure of just sitting down with a test in front of you, you know, most kids get themselves so worked up just over that alone. So I think that's going to be a huge benefit for New York State.
When you think about the mental health side of being a student, being a kid today, compared to 20, 30 years ago, one, how drastic is the difference? But then two, how much more help do school districts need from the state and frankly from the federal government to put more resources in front of students so their mental health is prioritized effectively?
Kids are not going to learn if they're not in the right frame of mind. You know, it's like I've talked in the past, we have a mobile dental clinic. Kids can't learn if their teeth hurt, right? So you talk about health. Mental health is a huge piece of what we deal with every day. You know, the difference is, too, when we went to school, right, there was a disconnect. We left school. We didn't show up till the next day. What happened in that time frame was our time. Nobody else. These kids are connected 24/7, whether it's social media. What the pressures that these kids face compared to what we faced is it's completely at a different level. And, you know, I technology can be a great thing, but it also can cause a lot of issues. And the mental health crisis that we deal with on a daily basis, and trust me, I do know, because I have programs in place where we're a school district that has one-to-one devices. So every child has a Chromebook, but I also have programs in there, and it's called Gaggle, that if kids are doing stuff that are unhealthy, I get warned about it. So I know when kids are having mental health, if they're using our, not their own cell phone, but our property, we get alerted, and I dealt with one last night till about 10 o'clock. So, you know, these are things that have become part of the education. School districts aren't about educating kids anymore. It's about raising the whole child. We provide breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a huge portion of our kids. That's why I don't like to have snow days. I know when I have snow days, my kids aren't eating, right? So I do everything I can to keep our schools open, even if I have to do a delay. You know, we're feeding kids. We're taking care of their dental needs. We're taking care of their mental health. Somewhere along the line, we have to find a way to educate the kids too. You know, and think about when I started out my career, you know, back in 1993, you know, we were focused on educating kids, you know, and but a lot more has gone on to school districts. We're not there just as teachers. We're there to actually help raise kids.
Is that not an indictment on the system not evolving enough over those? I know a lot of folks like to think about the 80s and 90s and even the early 2000s as, you know, the quote-unquote the good old days. but even, I go back to my days in high school in the late 2000s, and you could see the writing on the wall, right, in different areas. And I'm sure you're working through the 90s and 2000s in education before you become an assistant superintendent and then a superintendent. You could see, like, hints and signs of things, like, we should probably be changing some things. Is that not sort of the bigger issue, is that so little change happened over a span of several decades in education that kind of just having to, like, reinvent the whole wheel now?
Yeah, and you're right. And I remember when my kids, my daughter Taylor and Gino, were going to college and figuring out what they wanted to do. And I said to them, I love education, but don't get involved in it, because I think everything is going to end up being online learning. You know, yeah. COVID, if you listen to Cuomo speak over the years, you know, he really kicked teaching, the teaching profession. He made a lot of jabs at education. And you could see he was leaning towards, you know, we got to do it cheaper. We've got to do it cheaper. And I think what they thought was eventually teaching was going to be distance learning for everyone. We found out during COVID that didn't work,
yeah.
Right? Because kids need to be in schools. They need to be in the seats. The socialization is just as important as the education. When kids had that taken away for a year and a half, look at the mental health crisis. Look at the abuse cases. Yeah. Look at what happened to the world. You know, I think if I was having a conversation with them, my daughter is a speech pathologist. She works in our school district as well. So they didn't listen to their father anyways. But, you know, the point is my conversation with them be a little bit different now because I could see them leaning towards going to more of a remote distance learning teaching. Because think about it. If kids are home and they're online, we don't have to pay thousands and thousands of teachers. It doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Some of our kids excelled during COVID because a lot of them did have school anxiety. So that took anxiety out. 80% of our kids did much worse in that scenario. So I do think there's benefits of what we saw during COVID, but you know, you could see these coming year after year. You could see these, but nobody was willing to change anything. And now we're going to have to really make big changes in order to meet the needs of what society has brought to us now.
Speaking of homeschooling, how does a district like Auburn, in essence, you're competing with homeschooling, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the last times you and I talked, that was a driver, you said, of some of the decline in enrollment that you had seen in the last few years. You know, how does a district compete on that side?
Yeah, and again, homeschooling is not an easy thing. Parents find that out because they now become the teachers, right?
Yep.
And we as the school district, we monitor what they do. They have to hand in all of their work to us. They've got to show us their progress. So, you know, if people aren't doing that, we have to call them out for that. So, you know, I think we did see another rise in homeschooling after COVID because, again, there was the fear, right? The fear of kids going back into the school. We didn't know about the sickness. We really didn't know. I don't know if we even still know about really what COVID was all about. But we've seen kids come back into school more now. But we also get a lot of parent phone calls about, well, we'd like to have our kid learn remotely. We want our kid to learn online. And we don't offer that. That's not an option. So your option is your kids come to school physically, or you have to sign up to homeschool, which means you become the teacher and the principal, and you have to do all the assignments with your kids. And most parents don't have time to do that because they're working as well. So, you know, our homeschooling numbers have pretty much flattened back out again. Which I'm happy to see because, again, I think part of education, the socialization piece, is such a huge piece to it.
Yeah. Do you think there comes a point where some districts do start offering remote options for students across the board?
There are some that already do that.
Really?
There are.
Wow.
And I've spoken with, you know, our team, and I've spoken with our county. I wouldn't open up Pandora's box and because we already saw that it really, I know it can be good.
Yeah.
We do some online. Some kids do learn online. We have a tutoring online system for medical
sure.
reasons. So if
yep.
kids are out for medical excuses, we can use that. Or if we're waiting for placement of a kid from one program to another program, we will use that. But it's not an educational plan for our kids.
Yeah. Let's talk teacher. Teacher shortage. I hear those two words almost weekly. I have a lot of friends who are teachers who daydream about not being teachers, and I'm sure you've dealt with this sort of problem in your district, and I'm sure your colleagues in other districts deal with it too every day. When it comes to staffing, how much of a challenge and how much of an issue is that right now? And do you feel like things have either improved or gotten worse since the pandemic?
So Auburn hasn't really been affected too bad with the teacher shortage crisis. There's certain positions that we haven't been able to find for the last 10 years. Technology teachers.
Yeah.
And there's reasons why. To get that degree has become a lot tougher than it used to be. Special education at the secondary level. Back years ago, special ed certification was K through 12. So you could hire somebody and they could do K through 12. It became specialized. So secondary, you have to have a special ed certification plus biology or math or earth science. So it came very difficult for any school district to find that. They're changing those certifications. So where we have issues is, I'll tell you, our two biggest is special ed at the secondary level and nurses. We have a lot of trouble finding nurses because of the pandemic, the need for so many nurses, and we can't compete with those salaries.
Of course.
So those are the issues that we face. Do I think the crisis is going to get worse? Depending on what happens with funding, right? If school districts have to start laying off staff members because foundation aid is being cut, that's going to take teachers out of the school, and they're going to end up in different places. So again, depending on what the forecast looks for the future for budgeting, will really tell us. We already know that the colleges have a quarter of their students that are graduating with educational degrees back, 15, 20 years ago. So, playing out numbers, there is going to be a teacher shortage. But again, the funding is going to be another issue with that as well.
Following up on that, I liken often teaching to working in law enforcement. It seems like in some cases, at least, when folks choose to exit the profession, they don't just go to another district. They don't just go to another job. They say, see you later, I'm done. How concerned are you across the board that we're seeing perhaps too many teachers, not just here locally, but everywhere, opt to just leave education altogether because of the challenges and the strains that the whole system's facing?
I can speak to that from an Auburn perspective. We've had nobody that has done that. Yes, we've had people leave and take a job, and they live in Cato and they took a job in Cato, or they live in Syracuse and they took a job in Syracuse. I have not met with any teachers that said, I'm leaving the profession, which I guess is a good thing, right? Yeah. So maybe we're doing something good in Auburn that people feel that they're welcomed, that they're treated. And I would always hope, for that teachers feel like we take care of them. But I also know that they're dealing with a lot. And, like I said, it's not educating kids. It's taking care of their mental health needs, their physical needs, behaviors. We've seen a lot of behaviors over the course of the last 3 years. That certainly has escalated. Behaviors on the buses have escalated. So we deal with a lot more. I think what you're going to see is teachers burning out sooner. We look at police officers. They can retire after 20 years. Yeah. Teachers have to wait 30 years. I do believe that, and right now, the new tier, tier six, I believe it is, they can't retire until they're 62, which, again, the state has to look at, because that's another reason why a lot of teachers, you see younger teachers that are getting out of their profession, because they're like, I can't make it till I'm 62. Yeah. And they may end up with 40 years before they retire. So right now, we're lucky because it's 30 and 55. So once an educator has 30 years of service, as long as they're 55 or older, they can retire. But that new tier, you can't. You have to wait till you're 62. I think the state will look at that and change that.
Yeah.
But they better do it quickly, because that's another reason why some of our younger kids are not getting into the teaching profession, because they know they're going to have to do it for 40 years. And that's just too long. So So I do think that it all has an impact on the new laws that have come out, the mandates, but also the behaviors and the escalation of everything. Teachers are burning out a lot quicker.
Yeah. As we get towards the last bit here, I want to just touch on some broader things, get your take on some stuff before we get you out of here. Year-round education, are we closer to it or further away from it than we were at the start of your career?
Well, the state is, we actually don't get out until June 28th this year. So it seems like they've added an extra week at least into education.
Is that your retirement gift?
I guess so. We're actually going to do graduation the week before the last Friday of school. And the reason I decided to do that was because the next weekend's 4th of July weekend. Oh, yeah. I want to make sure our kids have enough. You got 300 kids, right, that are all trying to have graduation parties that aren't having them the same time all their friends are. So I thought giving them at least one extra weekend might help with that. So we moved it a week early. I'm suggesting for them to do it again next year, but I'll let them make that decision. So I do see that the school years seem to be getting longer and longer. As you know, there are a lot of countries that run year-long education. They might have a week break every 10 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting because that's going to be a lot of contract negotiations there that I won't be part of. But, yes, I could see that. I could see at least school districts having to have options for students. Again, we run summer school, right? So it's almost like we don't really have a break either.
Yeah.
But I do see it stretching longer versus shorter.
How would capital projects, for example, how would a lot of the work, the physical work that goes into making facilities what they are, how would that be struck? That's the one thing that sticks out to me as like a barrier to potentially doing, because school districts need that 8 weeks or so, 8 to 10 weeks to do some things, frankly, that would get in students' way or students' faculty would be in the way of those folks doing that work. Is that one potentially like big barrier that?
That's a huge barrier.
Yeah.
So last year, our summer school was at CCC. Dr. Durant was gracious enough to let us run our summer school at CCC because my high school was closed down for the entire summer. We're doing it again this summer because the high school is closed down all summer again.
Yeah.
To put rooftop units on, so we'll have cranes swinging those units on. Our conversation right now is we're trying to be strategic because there's such a holdup at the state level for approving the capital projects that it's increased to like 26 weeks. We were already supposed to have our approval for the work that's going to be done at the junior high for this summer. We still haven't gotten approval yet. So now it looks like we may be leaking into. So now we're trying to figure out a way get that work started, but it may run a couple of months into the school season where we have to block out that part of the building for our kids to be in there to go to school. A lot of the other pieces that we do, we're doing a lot of second and third shift work. So once the kids leave school, we have shifts coming in to wrap up some more of that capital project work. The issues that come down is when you got to shut the entire building down.
Yeah.
And that's the problems that you're talking. So if we didn't have the summer to do that, I don't know how we would get that capital project work done.
Yeah. Electric buses. Good, bad, and different. We talked about it a little bit before we came on. You said you were willing to go there, so let's go there. Thoughts on the state's expectations of school districts? Realistic, unrealistic, somewhere in the middle?
It is completely unrealistic. And there's multiple reasons. The grids, they don't have enough storage for the energy that is needed. The cost of it, these bus cost three times the cost of actual buses. Mileage, you can only get up to 100 miles. We have school districts in Cayuga County that are 180 square miles. So buses can't even do the trips to get kids to school. Field trips, sporting events. I mean, it's endless, the infrastructure that would have to be built. My biggest issue with this is this state is practically bankrupt. You can see the budget runs from the governor. School districts are getting millions of dollars taken away from them, some here in Seneca County as well, Cayuga County. If we're losing millions of dollars in state aid to educate kids, we're going to spend billions of dollars on buses, for green buses that have diesel heaters that are inside the buses. Makes no sense. Let's really focus on what's important. It's educating kids, not the buses that we are going to have problems after problems after problems with. Athletic events, you travel. We go to Indian River. Well, first of all, we can't make it there because the bus doesn't have enough mileage in it to get there. But now we got to plug in when we get up there so that we can make the trip almost back home. So again, I don't think the thought process was well developed. I don't think that by 2026, every bus you purchase is supposed to be a green bus. I think that they're going to have to put a halt on that. The technology is not there yet. The electric companies aren't there yet. The money's not. They can tell us there's all this money out there. Well, where's that money is, let's focus it and reinvest it on educating kids and getting kids what they need.
Mergers. You and I have had some pretty frank conversations over the years. And you have been one of the more open about the idea that some school districts will probably have to merge with neighboring districts over the next many, many years. When you think about what school districts, what the makeup of school districts might look like here in the region 10 years from now, 15 years from now, what do you think is going to be the biggest difference?
You know, again, and I wish educators would look at the positive spins of that. All these small towns and villages, they'll all keep their elementary schools, right? The elementary schools are not going to change. You're still going to have your elementary, your street schools, you know, your neighborhood schools. It's going to be more at the secondary level. And, you know, like I've had conversations with superintendents, you know, just in Cayuga County, we could open up multiple high schools. We could have a PTech high school. We could have an ag high school. We could have a performing arts high school. We could have a Pathway Regions Diploma high school. There's so many different opportunities and possibilities. But again, it's about saving money. And if we don't start looking at it ourselves, and I said this a few years ago to you, the state's going to take control of it, and whatever the state tells you to do, you're going to have to do. I like the merging is okay, but countywide school districts, I think, would be exactly what we needed. Our county, and I can only talk about Cayuga County, my superintendents are going to probably scream and yell at me, but, you know, we have under 10,000 kids total, right? Yeah. You got southern school districts, they have 200,000 kids in their county school districts. So, you know, they work, and I think money can be saved. And I think that, again, you can still keep that friendly competition. There's ways to do that, you know. Again, I remember when Seneca Falls and Waterloo talked about merging, and it did not work. But that's one of the big things, the rivalry, right? Well, wait a minute. Seneca Falls loves to play Waterloo. Well, you can still figure those things out, right? But unfortunately, with what we're looking at financially in New York State, we're going to be broke here. We have to find different ways to have success in the education world. And I think it's eventually going to happen, whether it's school districts merging or countywide school districts, it's going to happen.
Have people become more receptive to the idea of merging? Because I think you mentioned Seneca Falls and Waterloo, and I think that was over 15 years ago now.
It was. Yeah.
And just thinking about the attitudes that I heard then versus, you know, the reality of that conversation now. If that were to be proposed today, I don't think there would be much pushback to it, frankly. have people cooled on some of that rivalry that did exist, or maybe was more memorable than more recent, you know, shorter memory?
Well, it's more parents than it is kids, right?
Right.
It's adults, because we remember our childhood. And again, I get it, but Elmira has already done that. So Elmira Free Academy versus Southside was the biggest football game of the year, right? Mm-hmm. Now they're all one high school. So they've already merged. So I think you're seeing that happening more and more as you go across the state. But again, you know, I guess it depends on your audience that you're speaking to, yeah. Whether they're more accepting of it. Again, it's inevitable. You know, we're going to end up getting there. When parents are going to start yelling and complaining because class sizes are 30, because they can't afford more teachers, that's where you're going to start seeing, okay, now we've got to do something different to get our class sizes back down to where they need. But that's what's going to eventually happen is class sizes are going to exceed 30.
Yeah, yeah. Last question for you here. In terms of search for Auburn's next superintendent, will you play any role in that? Will you be sort of involved in the process in any way, shape, or form? Or are you in the back seat and saying, this is on you?
Absolutely none. yes, the Board of Education has kept me apprised of what they're doing, sort of what their timelines are.
Yep.
But as far as any part of the process, I do not want any part of the process. You know, that's their work to do and what their needs are. Of course, if they ever have to ask me a question or need something, I'm always there and available. But I'm taking a backseat to it right now.
But you're still answering the phone.
Oh, I still answer the phone whenever it rings. So,
Jeff, thanks for coming down today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, that's going to do it for this edition. For more episodes, check out Inside the FLX on YouTube, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. Thanks for listening. See you next time.